Ever since the beginning of time, man has pitted himself against the power of the sea to learn its secrets, to solve its mysteries. Many stories have been told of ships and the men who sail them, of sea beasts and the men who hunt them. But none has captured the imagination through the years so much as Herman Melville's immortal story of Captain Ahab, who lost his very soul in the bitterness of vengeance against the great white whale, Moby Dick.
The notion of anamorphosis and on the stain of desire and objet on the gaze, where you go from a sort of standard reading of Moby Dick's or traditional reading of Moby Dick's sublimity toward the way in which Moby Dick functions as a sublime object, because it's an extimate object that manifests, materializes desire. It gets externalized in the actual, you know, field of reality. So The real, it's a real, capital R real, incursion into reality, into lowercase r reality, the symbolic.
Rather than in the kind of Kantian view, a natural phenomenon that alludes to a greatness beyond it.
Right, right. Well, that's the difference, right, between the Kantian and the Hegelian sublime. I mean, he's written about it in other places, but the best overview of this for me is still, it's that last chapter of The Sublime Object of Ideology, where he begins, the first like 10 pages or so is a discussion of the Kantian versus the Hegelian sublime. Mm-hmm. And so for Kant, right, the sublime would be a mediator, right? It's not, the sublime object is not the thing in itself. It is an object that points us, it's kind of an indexical. It points us toward a thing in itself. But for Kant, the thing in itself has a positive existence in the noumenal beyond the phenomenal, right? Whereas for Hegel, you know, whenever I have debates with Graham Harman, he says explicitly or very directly, Hegel gets rid of the thing in itself. And that's partially true, but he only gets rid of the thing in itself in the Kantian sense of having a sort of positive ontology beyond the phenomenal. It's not that he gets rid of the thing in itself. I mean, the thing basically becomes the idea, but it's that the thing in itself is nothing but the failure of the symbolic to be all.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Of course, Hegel wouldn't use the term symbolic, but in at least in the sense that Lacan does. But it's that the very experience of the negativity of the phenomenal to represent the noumenal is itself the noumenal. And that's where the Lacanian angle comes in, right? Because the real, it's not that you have imaginary symbolic real as separate, entirely, you know, independent realms that somehow become imbricated with each other, right? The real, and this goes back to what we were talking about with temporality with regard to the periodization of literature, but the real both precedes and comes after the symbolic, because the real is nothing but, it doesn't have a positive existence. Mm. The real is when the fabric of the symbolic starts to come apart, because there is this unsymbolizable, integratable, you know, recalcitrant kernel of enjoyment that no matter, you know, how thorough a process of symbolization might be, it just cannot incorporate. It's not something positive that, you know, we somehow get glimpses of when the fabric between the phenomenal and the noumenal gets disturbed, right?
And a nice tie in there with Lacanian theory is that, you know, reality itself is a structure of fiction.
Yes, yes, exactly, right? The notion that what we experience as reality, or let me put it this way, right? For Lacan, what we call reality is symbolic, because if we weren't initiated into a symbolic field and had the right coordinates, it'd be very hard to exist as a functioning, you wouldn't really be a subject in the sense of the barred subject, right? Because that's what has to happen in order to become subjectivized.
And so on.